Blog Talk Radio.
Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron. Just trying to connect here with Edo Pentacal.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 21560.
I'm a little late today. I will check them in a minute again. And I'm sure we'll be getting the psychic Tom on the line here shortly. We have a special guest tonight, Dr. Brent Nelson. He's got a special interest in mixed martial arts, boxing, combat sports in general, but also obviously in the medical field. And he's going to tell us a little bit about some thoughts he has about injuries in combat sports and some preventive measures maybe that some people could take. And we've got quite a bit of news to cover this week. Results, of course. A lot of big-time fights over the weekend, boxing and mixed martial arts. UFC had two events. So tons and tons and tons and tons to discuss. Definitely going to be an interesting show, and there we have it. This is Psychic Tom. How's it going, Tom?
Good evening, gentlemen. Much to discuss, as always.
Yes, sir. And actually, this is one of the first times you beat Tony on. Tony's not answering his phone. Not bad. Got to look at your football. What's wrong with him? We'll try in another few minutes.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Hope everything's all right there with Tony. Anyway, starting off here with a little bit of MMA story I just read today. Actually, yesterday I read that Anderson Silva is saying he wants to come back with a fight against Nick Diaz. And just today, Diaz chimed in and said, yeah, that's just the sort of thing my age, but the money has to be right. So, pretty interesting matchup, I think. You know, not so much before the injury as after, but I don't think Nick Diaz has a chance either way, whether it was against the prime Silva or now injury recovering Silva.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the injury just might make it more of a question mark for a sale, but I think the likelihood of it happening is not too good if you looked at the numbers Nick was throwing around. I just don't see that happening. I mean, not that he doesn't deserve it.
Right.
Let's not get on that again, or we'll be talking until 10 o'clock on that. But, you know, our familiar refrain, you know. But, I mean, no, I think he deserves every – all fighters deserve more than they're getting in some ways, but in most ways. But I just don't see it. But, yeah, apparently Anderson's not done yet.
And Eddie Wineland is talking about retiring now. He's just about to have his wires taken off of his jaw. He hasn't been able to eat for nearly a month, at least solid foods. His jaw wired shut after a knockout loss to Johnny Eduardo at UFC Fight Night on April 10th. And the experience, this is his second time having his jaw broken. First time, I guess, was in the amateurs, I think, 2004 on the independent circuit. I guess you could call that the amateurs compared to the UFC. But obviously that's not a pleasant experience, and he doesn't want to go through it ever again. So he's talking about retiring because of that, and I don't blame him. I mean, I don't think I've ever had a significant jaw injury, period, whether it's even bruising my jaw. I don't think I've ever had that, so I can't relate. But I can imagine having your jaw wired shut has to suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting with the guest we have on tonight. We can ask him about if he thinks that some injuries, if he thinks after most injuries that the person's never quite the same.
Right. And we'll have to ask him about broken jaw, too, how easy that is to
react.
Right,
because that's the $64,000 question. Would Eddie be more susceptible to it down the road? I mean, I don't know, but, hey, that's the advantage of having the type of guest we have tonight. Hopefully we'll get some medical insight to it from a pro.
And speaking of guests, a couple former guests had some big wins this weekend in the boxing ring. Hank Lundy took part in the main event out at Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut. Even though he wasn't fighting top-level talent, he took care of Gerardo Pepino Cuevas Jr. at just 223 of the second round, knocking him out. He improves to 25-3-1 there. We also had a more recent guest, Bobby Gunn Jr., got his third knockout. Another one in the first round, too. And this time it was a body shot, from what I read. He gave the guy a nice hook to the body after he knocked him down and gave him a standing 8-count. So more power to him. Sounds like he's definitely following his father's footsteps, and he's not waiting much. Fight his next fight, I think it's just going to be a few weeks from now. So.
Well, you know, he's young, and it's a time to go for it. Just stay
right.
Active. You know, it's like playing an instrument. The more you play, the better you get. You know, going back to Cuevas Jr., that has to be a rough road for him to hoe. That Pepino, if you are you familiar with his career much?
No.
Okay. Well. Pepino in the mid to late 70s was just knocking everyone out. He didn't have a ton of boxing skills, but he had a left hook. I understand that maybe it was Gleason's gym. It was one of these things that's in my computer brain here from, you know, reading back in those days that apparently there were only two people that actually unhinged one of the big bags there. One of them was George Foreman, and the other one was Pepino. He just had unusual power, and then he was defending against Thomas Hearns, and Hearns knocked him out in the second round, and he was never quite the same. And then he got knocked out. He started a series of knockouts, and I was ringside in January of 83 for the Roberto Duran Pepino Cuevas fight. And Cuevas still had his punch, but he couldn't affect Duran, and Duran finished him off, and it was straight downhill. But he had a great career. My point is, with his son, apparently his son just did not inherit that punching power. And I often wonder, you know, we've talked about that, like with Hector Jr., what that's like fighting in the shadow of your father.
Right.
Yeah, and it has to be a lot of pressure.
Yeah, we definitely got our mileage out of that Hector interview.
Yeah.
21,000 listens, so that's our record. Anyway, Don King's also in the news on a couple of stories. The first one's a positive one. We'll get to the negative one later. He's got a lawsuit going again. So no big surprise there, but this is kind of interesting. He's actually got one world champion under contract, and that's Bermain Stiverne, who is the new WBC heavyweight champion after taking out Chris Areola in the rematch. Got the vacant belt from vacated by Vitaly Klitschko. Don King Productions is saying that every title defense of Stiverne's, they'll give something to overseas troops serving on military bases and ships around the world. They'll be broadcasting it to troops around the world on the Armed Forces Network. And it's their way of saying thank you to the men and women who comprise the greatest military force on the planet who fight for liberty, justice, freedom, equality, and peace. according to the statement they released. Big fight being promoted, just announced the other day, Gennady Golovkin and Daniel Gill. Golovkin is 29-0, Gill is 30-2. This is going to be at Madison Square Garden on July 26th. So,
what is the style? Daniel, what was his last name? Gennady's opponent?
Gill, G-E-A-L-E. He's a British guy, if I remember correctly. I get a lot of stuff from the UK.
What do you know about his style? Is he more of a boxer or a puncher? Or?
I don't know. I haven't really seen him fight. I just have read a lot of press releases and stuff from folks over.
Yeah. Do you know what his KO, what his record is? He said 30-2, but how many KOs does he have? Do you know offhand, or, I mean, do you have it?
I can search. I can give us a little box rec insight on that in a minute. But Golovkin is going to be defending his WBO or WBA and IBO title against Gill, and tickets will go on sale June 5th today at 10 a.m. Eastern through Ticketmaster.com. Search here for Gill. No, Golovkin's knockout rate is pretty significant.
Yeah, that's kind of off the charts, and that's why I'm wondering what kind of fight we may have here. You know, a lot of guys, if they don't have a lot of KOs, they'll refer to themselves as boxer punchers.
Right.
And but I've never heard someone refer to themselves as a boxer puncher brawler. That would be kind of, I don't hear too many guys saying that. They don't even refer to themselves as brawlers, just more boxer puncher, but see how many KOs he has.
All right. Let's give it a search. Hold on a second. Let's see. Interesting thing here. ESPN's coverage of Miguel Cotto versus Sergio Martinez. They're going to do some extensive pre- and post-fight coverage of Saturday's pay-per-view bout between Cotto and Martinez. And the pay-per-view is going to be starting at 9 p.m. But as part of their agreement with HBO Sports, they're going to include some press conference and weigh-in coverage and classic Cotto and Martinez fights. They're going to do a pre-fight show, non-televised undercard fights, and more. So, I've ever heard of something like this with ESPN.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think that's kind of an intriguing, just my gut feeling, and here's where we need Tony to chime in on this, but my gut feeling is this is almost a must-win for both guys. What would you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, not so much, I think, for Martinez, but definitely for Cotto. Just to remain relevant.
Well, exactly. But now Martinez also is getting up against age. He's getting up against injury. And, you know, there's that kind of rumble now. Well, is he past his prime? And how would he do against some? You know what I mean? So I think he needs to shine in this one. I mean, at the very least, win.
Well, let's see if we can get the expert to give us some insight on that. I do have another story on that later about Freddie Roach's predictions for that fight. I think he's been looking in your crystal ball. You let him borrow it because he's for a knockout by Cotto, I think.
Really?
Very interesting.
Well.
And I guess he must be training Cotto now. If I remember correctly, I think that's what he said. There it is, yeah. Yeah, he said Miguel Cotto will win by a knockout.
Well, that would be a horrible setback for Martinez because I think he still, if he could really shine, he may have a couple good money fights left. Another technical glitch. I just got knocked off. So I'm going to see if it's live version still going.
Okay, looks like we're back. Waiting for Tom to dial in again. Got Tony in the meantime. Finally connected. So when we broke off, we were talking about the Cotto versus Martinez fight this weekend, and I said that I think Tom might have let Freddie Roach borrow his crystal ball, because he's saying that it's going to be a knockout win for Cotto. We think they have Martinez figured out. What are your thoughts on that fight, Tony?
Well, I'm actually starting my preview. I'm doing one of my predictions on this one. And right now, everything with the meeting and a meeting here keeps going. Yes, it'll be a stoppage, but it'll be terrible for the one being stopped.
But it'll be what?
It'll be terrible for the one that gets stopped.
Oh, okay.
Probably, I'd say around 9 rounds.
And Tom was asking about Daniel Gill versus Gennady Golovkin, but Gill's knockout rate, he's got 16 knockouts, just for the record there.
Were you guys on already?
Yeah, we were on for about 15 minutes, and then all of a sudden I kicked off and I tried to call you again. So
I was never on with you guys.
Right, but I kept trying to call you, and just last time I tried, it just kicked us all off. So we got Tom back.
All right.
And plenty to talk about, plenty of big cards to go over, and both results and future fights. We got two events from UFC over the weekend. On Saturday, we had one at 3 o'clock and one at 10 o'clock at night. One in Brazil and one in Germany. I thought both of them were pretty interesting cards. And I was glad to see a Zion-sponsored fighter go down in the main event there over in Germany. That was actually the only fight I caught on that card. But even though I promised I would make sure to know what time everything started, I guess I slept a little late that day. So I did tune in time to see Gegard Mousasi choke out Mark Munoz with a rear naked choke in the first round. And I did say that I thought that Mousasi would be pretty much at home anywhere in Europe, but it turns out he's from the Netherlands, which is just near the border there in Germany. So he definitely had a lot of fans for that one. Well, I take it back. I did watch also the co-main event, C.B. Dalloway versus Francis Carmont. It was kind of a sloppy, ugly fight. It was kind of all over the place. But Dalloway got the surprising unanimous decision. Carmont's another guy from Europe, so he seemed like he was surprised to get that. I think he did out-wrestle Carmont in most of the bout. We had a former guest of mine who I interviewed for Ultimate Fighter magazine go down against Sean Strickland, Luke Barnett, lost a Smith decision to Sean Strickland. Very surprising. I thought he was going to do better. But this is what it is. Also had Nicholas Backstrom beat Tom Minamaki by rear naked choke submission. Nick Heim beat Drew Dober by unanimous decision. Magnus Seidenblad beat Christoph Jelko, guillotine choke in the second round. Yuri Alcantara beat Long Lee by KO from punches 25 seconds into the first round. Peter Sabata, also on the card, beat Pavel Soblak by unanimous decision. Maximo Blanco beat Andy Ogle by unanimous decision, and Ruslan Magomedov beat Victor Testa by unanimous decision. And it's pretty interesting. And then we have the Brazilian card. Remind me of who fought on that card. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Well, how about the main event? Did you want to start with that?
Yeah, I just need something to look up here. I'm sure I'm having a brain fart.
Okay, Stipe Miocic won in 35 seconds over Fabio Maldonado.
Yes. That was pretty interesting because, you know, we talked about fast defense in boxing and MMA. I did that big article just last night. Posted on the blog. Got a lot of buzz, including from Richie Johnson. Richie Johnson, former guest of ours, former world champ boxer. I didn't realize his defense was also kind of adopted from George Foreman and Archie Moore style. It's today of him fighting some good defense, not only that, but with some head movement, knocking into some punches. But his take on it was that, hey, it's probably a matter of all these trainers dying off. You know, he mentioned guys like Eddie Futch. I added, big-time guy in New England there. Petronelli's gym there. Pat Petronelli and Goody Petronelli died pretty close to each other. Then we had Daniel Stewart. What's the other guy? Angelo Dundee died pretty closely to both of those guys, Petronelli. So I guess that's the point. But getting back to the Ultimate Fighter 3 Brazil finale there, Maldonado, the announcers kept talking about, oh, well, he's 22-0 in boxing, professional boxer. Well, you got to look at that 22-0 record.
Yeah.
Before talking about how great that is, because, number one, he fought most of those guys down in Brazil. I think I ran the numbers on it. He fought, like, six people who were having their pro debut, and 12 people who had losing records and or one or less than one win or less. Only two people on his entire record had a winning record. So.
Yeah, I kind of thought there was something a little funny there because if you're 22-0 as a pro boxer, why would you be leaving that sport to make a lateral transfer into MMA when you're having such phenomenal success in boxing? It didn't make sense to me.
No.
And now we can see why. Now, to be fair to him, he tried the only way he felt he could pull it off, and Marcus said, Stipe's trainer, my former trainer, he had said that the one thing he really didn't want was to have Stipe standing in the pocket exchanging because he felt that would be Fabio's perhaps only chance to win. But to Fabio's credit, he didn't give him much choice. He just charged in. I don't know if you guys were able to see it, but Stipe just brought out the heavy cannons early and had him in a bit of trouble early on and then seemed to back off. I don't know if he sensed that Fabio was playing possum a little bit. But then he went back in, and the second time he dropped him, it was a matter of time. So
Maldonado seems surprised, too, by that. Because, you know, he's covering his face, looked like he's really badly hurt, and then he's expecting the next punch, and nothing comes, and he takes his hands down, and he looked up at the object like, what's the problem? Back to against the cage, and it continued for a little while, and the object just went off, and He's talking about crystal balls. I mean, he predicted it. He was going to be the first one to knock him out in the UFC, even though he had been knocked out before, TKO. Yeah, he got the job done, predicted it, and followed through on his prediction.
Then there were a few idiot commentators in the underground saying that, well, what right did Stipe have to celebrate, and he must be a bully because he knocked out a smaller guy. Well, first off, Stipe went down there to fight Junior Dos Santos. It's not his fault that Junior got hurt. I mean, I'm sure, and I'm going to try to make it up. There's a local card here Saturday. I'll try to make it up, and Stipe will be there, and if I can see if I can get him on the show. But I'd like to ask him, you know, I'm sure he felt terrible that Junior wasn't there. But, I mean, all the time you put into it and you win the fight, you have every right to celebrate.
Right. And then, of course, we had the couple fights. The show is based on the Ultimate Fighter Brazil 3 finale. We had Antonio Carlos Jr. take out Vitor Miranda, the heavyweights. And then Warley Alves beat Marcio Alexander Jr. by guillotine choke. The other one was a unanimous decision by Carlos Jr. there. Both fights were pretty intriguing. Carlos Jr. has very limited professional experience, but just went out there and dominated and just tossed his opponent all around the cage. And Warley Alves actually was pretty much known for every time somebody went to go for a single leg takedown on the show, he'd sink that guillotine choke. So for some reason, Alexander Jr. didn't get the memo on that one and totally overlooked that and went for it in the third round in a fight he was losing already. But Alves got the choke at the 25-second mark there in the third. And both of those guys should be pretty good in the UFC. Then we had Damian Maia beat Alexander decision. Robbie Peralta in a split decision over Ronnie Mariano Mazzara. Rashid Magomedov beat Rodrigo Dan by unanimous decision. Ilias Solidario Ernest by rear naked choke. Gassan Umulatov beat Paulo Thiago by unanimous decision. Edmilson Souza beat Mark Edema by TKO. Ricardo Abreu beat Bac Silva by rear naked choke submission. Marcos Rogério de Lima beat Richardson Herrera knockout in the first round. Michael punches. Pedro Munhoz, Matt Hobar by TKO, also punches. And the first round at the 247 mark there, which is rounding up that card. And we had a ton, literally, boxing action over the weekend. I actually only watched one fight boxing. And it would be Carl Froch versus George Groves fight. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch that, but that was a pretty decent fight.
I only got to see part of it, but what I didn't see was the knockout. That was the most impressive part of it. And basically what Frost did was what a good professional would do. He saw that, you know, when everything was at work, Graves was really throwing his right up to our land if they were right. But the problem was with his left hand, he was keeping low. And Frost threw a right left to one time, basically baiting him in to throw his right hand up tight and keeping his left low, and he blasted him with a beautiful right hand, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, it was kind of a falling left hook to set it up, and then it was equal to the top. We'll come back. Probably the first time I've seen anything like that, where he's second and then spring into his feet the next. He had some knee fights where they looked like they're out of it and that kind of take down the ref. But never in a boxing match have I seen anybody have that effect of being out on the ground, his leg pit back underneath, and as soon as that leg's great, he was get up, and got up pretty fast, so he was obviously in condition to continue that. He was actually able to get some traction by then, so it was kind of on his part. The fight, they talked to all the fighters, and it was interesting because Carl Froch said that was the biggest fight of his entire career. And you would think, you know, all those title fights were the titles, defended them against seasoned opposition. I think one of those would be his best fight, but apparently it's just because of the atmosphere and the demand for that rematch and the way he finished it out. Got the job done. I guess he liked that one a little bit. Well, no talk of retirement or anything like that. The only career change he's talking about is actually more of a life change. He's talking about getting married to his girlfriend there, fiance. And then he's actually trying to get a fight in the United States in Vegas. That's pretty much his dream to get that job done and do that.
What I saw with the guy like Carl Froch is a guy, he hits hard, he's got a good chin, he's strong, he's physical, he's a little bit awkward, but I don't see him, unless Andre Ward comes in there with his shoelaces tied together and one hand tied behind his back, I can't see Carl Froch beating a guy like Andre Ward. Andre Ward is too good of a boxer, he's, too well schooled. Now, if you look at their, if you look at back at Carl Frost's shooting career, Jermaine Taylor had him down and had him hurt bad. Jermaine Taylor was so gun shy at that point, he refused to follow up. That played pretty much even times. He pretty much knocked Taylor out with a matter of seconds to go in the last round. Frost had the fight with Michel Kessler. Kessler won the first one, Frost won the second one. We had a big knockout win over Lucha DK, but we came to find out that DK is, a well-skilled fighter, but, weak chin, and, can be bullied on the inside, and he doesn't have the strength to match up with a guy like Frost. But you put Frost in there with the guy, what is Andre Ward again? Ward is going to, bait him in there. He's going to hit him. He's going to jab, he's going to move, he's going to grind you. And he's going to put him on the inside. I can't see Frost beating him unless Ward, with so much muscle in him from, his, absence and from injuries and things of that nature.
Yeah, it's probably not the fight he's going to want either. I mean, he's kind of winding down his career, so he's probably going to want somebody that's got a name, but somebody he can beat. Knows it, but we'll see. Also on that card, we had Kevin Mitchell knocking out Ghislaine Maduma there in the 11th round of a 12-round fight. And James DeGeel was actually, they said, was going to be the mandatory for Frock. I'm not sure why, but he beat Brandon Gonzalez by TKO in the 4th round and actually called out Frock. So we'll see if he gets that opportunity. But I guess it depends on whether he's going to go to Vegas or not. Or if they decide to have a fight there.
I know, it's a big thing to get a chance to fight in Vegas, but I don't know how smart that would be to fight the part. Because as you said, it's pretty winding down here, as he's getting older. He's still up into the prime of his career, but he knows how much time he's got left. I think Fox would need to stay in England. When you're drawing that many fans to run the stadium, 80,000 people, and that's like Bruce Bulldog gave Bruce Smith numbers.
Yeah, and he was pretty stoked up by that, even though actually there were a lot of boos and people in his corner. I mean, you got a guy in St. George.
Yes,
that's a little bit
polarizing there. While we're on this weekend's fight, I do want to bring up the card that was in China. I think Tom went to that one. I didn't get to see it. I didn't make it home in time for this one. But they did have a two-title fight card in China. And I was just looking at the results here, and pretty interesting, your boy maybe, not my boy, but Victor Chinian got knocked out.
Yes, I can
hear. He got stopped in 5 rounds by undefeated Nicholas Walters. 24-0, 20 knockouts now. Had Victor Arcini down once in the second and twice in the fifth and stopped him in five rounds. We had Nonito Dormer, the Filipino flash on the card, and his fight was a technical decision. And what happened is he was fighting a guy by the name of Simpawai Yetza, and it looks like, yeah, he was, I mean, yeah, Nonito Dormer was 33-2, 21 knockouts that he is now after the win, and he was fighting this opponent here, who was 20-52 coming in, and it looks like Donaire was cut at the end of round one by a head punch. He knocked Yetka down in the fourth, and they stopped the fight in the fifth due to the cut on Donaire's head from the headbutt. And it went to the cards, and Donaire won a unanimous decision. Also, it was a fight we had talked about a rematch. Sam Solomon, he has Felix Sturm's number. We discussed where Solomon had beaten Sturm previously by decision, and then it got ruled in no contest because Solomon tested positive for banned substance. Looks like Solomon went over to Germany again and beat him again. And pretty dominating, you know, to beat the German champion in Germany by scores of 118-110, 118-110, and 117-111.
Wow.
On the cards.
And he's 40 years old.
Of the 12 rounds and two of the cards.
So no excuse.
Wow.
Right? 40 years old,
sorry. The last time they fought, that was back last February. And Sturm had won that fight, and excuse me, Solomon had beat Sturm in that fight, and two of the scores were 114-113. And it was a unanimous decision. But two of the judges only had him winning by 1 point. This time, it looks like he left no doubt in any of the judges' minds.
Yeah, and those were just a few of the fights you're mentioning there that happened over the weekend. I think it was bigger for boxing than it was for MMA, even though there was a lot of MMA going on, too. But, so there was a lot of fights going on. I mentioned earlier before we got on with you, Tony, that Hank Lundy had a pretty decisive knockout there on Gerardo Pepino Cuevas Jr. there.
And that's important for Hank on a couple levels. It was a two-digit fight. It was a fight, you know, they could get up and get some work in, keep in the public eye. But at the same time, you know, it's a dangerous fight because, you know, we all know the gaffe about Hank's skin. You know, he's been knocked down in a couple of fights. He's been stopped before. And that's always a concern when he steps in the ring. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is sometimes, as much as I like Hank, sometimes he posts in there. Sometimes he'll have a guy stuff or have him hurt, and then he'll kind of back off. It really hurt him in the fight, not against John Molina. It was a fight that he lost after that. And I'm drawing a blank. I apologize on his opponent's name. But he had the guy, and he was winning the fight, and then he kind of started backing off. And he was not like he was posturing, but he was, you know, sticking his tongue out a little bit, and he kind of, you know, doing like a bull strut, you know, you get your feet like you're rubbing up. He was doing a lot of that, but he wasn't doing enough work, and he let his opponent get around. And you're fighting a guy that you brought in, and you need to beat him impressively. And you do that, and you knock it out, two rounds, that's a good thing. That's what needs to be done.
All right. Now, we also had not really a significant card here, but I thought I'd mention the guy who's probably got the most recorded fights in human history, Travis Holt, was in action over the weekend and got no contest. His name is Eric Scribner, and just looking at his boxing record, his last fight, was his fifth loss in a row. He got disqualified for excessive holding against a guy who was 4-0 boxing. He's also got, like 400 MMA fights last I checked. So, just an unbelievable record there. Keeps on going.
What is Travis's boxing record now?
It is 21-37, I think. Just checked it. It's out of those scores. 21-37. He's got 20 knockout wins, 28 knockouts on the losing side, and one draw. Not too shabby for a two-sport veteran. But more importantly, we have another former guest of ours. Got a win out in New Jersey. Alex Perez beat Jeremiah Wiggins by third round TKO. Good job on his part. That was the same card that Bobby Gunn Jr. was on. He got his TKO against Christopher Patrick Strootman in the first round. And then we had a Vegas card, of course, at the Tropicana Hotel and Casino. Javier Fortuna got a unanimous decision against Juan Antonio Rodriguez. Also, a guy from New England there had a tough fight, losing effort against Luis Rosa. Luis Orlando Del Valle went down by unanimous decision also there in that fight. He had Sergio Mora also on this card, beating Samuel Rogers by TKO in the fifth round of an eight-rounder. And Rocco Santamoro beat Daniel Quevedo by unanimous decision in an eight-round fight. So tons and tons of action this weekend. Let's see what else. We've got anything else here. I'm sure we've got something. I guess that's it. And Tony rounded out the other couple cards that we didn't mention. Here's an interesting story for you, Tony. I know you're a big Smokin' Joe Frazier fan.
I am.
Well, his business and personal manager for the last 7.5 years, Leslie Wolf, is putting up for sale several privately limited edition, private limited edition selection of items, with many one-of-a-kind items collected during his relationship with Frazier and other things that Frazier gave him. And if you're interested in busting out some money for these items, you can contact Leslie Wolf at marketingsmartly@aol.com. I don't know if it's going to be an auction or what, but this is all the information that's here in the article. So, marketing smartly.
Yeah, you just kind of hope a little bit that, you know, if he's selling these items or auctioning these items off, you know, a lot of it, you know, you want to find out, you know, what his intention with that is. You know, is it, you know, is he doing that to maybe do something for the youth in the area? Or, you know, is he doing it for, you know, like charitable? Holy shit, dude, if you guys got the Fox on, check out this plate on Fox. It's a lump on this guy's head. Holy crap. They just stopped it, but yeah. You get a chance, you gotta see this. You look at this uniform. Fox Sports.
Like,
somebody on it, and he got a fight, and it was the first round, and I don't know if they clashed heads or whatever, but the one guy was bitching. Next thing I know, he's got a lump on his head, like Hakeem Lockman, like. And then, like a minute or so later, the guy hit him with a right hand and, like, dropped him on his face. And by the time he got up, the referee stopped him. He still got this, oh, my God. Dude, it looks like he's got a big softball on his head.
Nice. Well, not nice for him.
Oh, I don't know if I ever told you guys this one. Tom, I don't know if you were on the show when you were with us when I had heard this story for the first time. I was at a fight. Actually, this was so long ago, I wasn't even covering fights yet for Fight News Unlimited. This is right after Rich and I started talking, and, you know, I was starting to go to a lot of fights. He said, yeah, you know, you can cover them or send me pictures or articles, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. So I went to a fight one time, and I was watching it. It was the last card I went to that I didn't cover. And one heavyweight was out there, big, bulky, broad guy. He's fighting this other guy, and he starts hitting him in the body. And he goes over there and, ugh. Guy turns around in the fourth round and pukes. Well, as he's puking, the guy that hit him in the body runs up to uppercut him, slips and falls in it. And then, after they wiped it up, they let the other guy continue, and he lasted the distance. He lasted the last 30 seconds of the round. It goes in the distance. And so I was reading an article on the most disgusting things ever seen in the ring. And one, there was a And this is local. This is like in Philadelphia or New Jersey. Because the one guy that wrote about it was like a Philadelphia official. And he wrote one time that a guy got in the ring and he had a lump on his head. And they thought it might have been like, you know, a mouth that maybe got sparring, or maybe a clash of heads in sparring or something like that. Or, you know, the old Chavez excuse that he's playing with his son and he got hit. This guy's got a lump on his head to start the fight. And the other guy starts targeting him and jabbing the shit out of it. And this lump is getting bigger on the side for him. He's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally, he gets it with a shot, and the lump split open, and they said a shitload of lights came out.
Wow. That I never heard of. Wow.
It's not as disgusting, of course, but I remember there was a guy actually coming back this weekend, James Nicolaus Thompson. When he fought Kendall Slice, he had one of those cauliflower ears situations, and had it exploded by a left or right hook from Kimbo. And I think Kimbo got lucky there because obviously it wasn't hurting that bad. It was probably should have been popped because you know that's what doctors do. They stick a needle in there and they take all the blood out. You know, because I've had it done myself. It's probably kind of a relief at that point to have it popped, but the referee didn't like it, so I think they ended up stopping it, so, partially because of that. But getting back to boxing, there's a book out, Confusing the Enemy, the Customato Story, by Acanthus Publishing. That's a book, biography of Customato, and got the 2014 Eric Hoffer Book Award. It's written by Dr. Scott Weiss and Paige Stuber. And I haven't heard of this award before, but it sounds pretty significant. A reader on Facebook said, it is impossible to have a full understanding of boxing history without this book. And Boxing Magazine also declared it an instant classic for the boxing bookshelf. So if you're a big reader, if you like combat sports or boxing, Confusing the Enemy. Check it out. So, and if you haven't checked it out already, talk about Confusing the Enemy. You can read my article on FightNewsUnlimited.com about defense. And I mentioned custom there for the Mike Tyson peekaboo style defense there. Holmes always glued to his chin. It's a very effective technique. And speaking of Tyson, he and Larry Holmes are going to be sitting down for a big discussion at the Turning Stone Resort Casino. Actually, it happened yesterday, last night at 6 p.m. So hopefully it will. They called it Kings of the Ring, a conversation with Mike Tyson and Larry Holmes. And it was supposed to be a pretty open dialogue between the two world-class heavyweights. I actually do remember seeing them fight each other on HBO today, and Larry Holmes rolled on his back like he was imitating a rocking chair there pretty quickly. Probably shouldn't have taken that fight to begin with. I got to see Larry in the flesh up there in Brockton for the Marciano statue dedication. Singing talent there too. And he was hanging out at George's Cafe.
You got to give Larry credit on the speed check. Because, you know, he came into that town, and for a long time, he was public enemy number one in Brockton. And I knew he was going to be there. And it was like, how is he going to get his food? You know, I mean, is there still going to be some lingering bitterness from that time he made 30 years ago almost? And the first thing that really caught my eye when we were in the stadium, when Larry was getting introduced, is when Yaki's brother Peter went over and they embraced. And I remember, and then when Larry came up and gave the speech and everybody gave him a standing ovation, I really know, that's proof that time does heal all wounds, and forgiveness is a powerful thing on both ends.
And another former guest of ours, Christy Martin, is getting honored pretty soon here on July 10th. They're going to have the first annual inauguration of a Hall of Fame class for the International Women's Boxing Hall of Fame. And her ring career spanned almost 23 years, from September 9th, 1989 in Bristol, Tennessee, to August 13th, 2012 in Fremont, California. 59 fights, 285 rounds. Final tally of 49 wins, 7 losses, and 3 draws. And 16 fights were in Vegas. Of course, her glory years came in the mid-90s when she fought for promoter Don King. And
yep.
Signed with him in 1993. More than 3 years before, she was paid $15,000 for her win over Deirdre Gogarty. And
Well, the show on that Mike Tyson, I think it was the Tyson-Bruno card, the rematch in March of 92. I mean, she stole the show. Her and, you know, Deirdre Gogarty put on a war. It was funny, cause I like that because I had the opportunity to ask her about that fight and how cool that was. And I had a chance to do my rain man on there. I was like, yeah, I think it was Deirdre Gogarty. And she's like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, yeah, I told you, I knew it.
And she talked about in this article the opportunity she had to finally meet Gogarty again years after the bout and thank her for that. And she talked about how after that fight she started going into convulsions because she had put so much effort into it. And she never had that experience before or after that fight. So it tells you what kind of barn burner it really was. The other inductees are Bonnie Canino, Lucia Riker, Regina Halmick, Christy Halbert, Barbara Buttrick, and posthumously Joanne Hagen. And perfect transition here to another little MMA story. Reminds me of Iceman John Scully. Fedor Emelianenko, some controversial comments about women fighting in mixed martial arts. But it's kind of contradictory if you look at his exact words. He said, quote, "I respect the girls who defend the country's honor at the Olympics in wrestling, boxing, but I do not support female MMA. A woman must be a domestic goddess, raise her children, and be feminine. There are a lot of different sports which help her in that, but MMA is not one of them." So, not a big fan of female MMA there. But just for somebody to say that just after they say it's okay in wrestling and boxing, I don't. You know,
yeah.
Just talking about the Olympics and you know, most people after they go in the Olympics, you know, they don't, they might not go pro, especially in wrestling. But very weird. Very weird to preface that with, well, I don't care about the Olympics and wrestling and boxing, but not MMA.
I want to yell something to Tom before Tom. But, you know, tell me that this is live. It's a Golden Boy fight card, and it's a Fox Sports. It's the main event about to start. It's an Emmanuel with a camera. I don't know if it's enough. He's fighting that kid we saw last year in King of Prussia, Kevin Farmer, the one who had that 8-round knockout. Yeah,
right.
You're about to see it right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Farmer just been introduced, and like I said, he's 16-4. He's got 3 knockouts. One of them, the knockouts, was when we were down there and stopped a really tough Victor Vasquez. Put him up pretty good. And he's sitting there getting ready to fight Emmanuel. I think he's going to be Emmanuel Taylor, which I can't say I know much about. I mean, they're about to announce his record right now. Emmanuel Gonzalez, not feel like an ass. Emmanuel Gonzalez is 14-0 with 7 knockouts in the Bronx. So, you know, he's going to be the favorite guy going into this title. You know, we saw Kevin put on a hell of a show last year.
Wow. for all our listeners, you don't have to watch that. You can listen to us. Or you can watch it with the sound off. Tony's doing, obviously. All right, we have Dr. Brent Nelson waiting in the wings here. How's it going, Brent? Dr. Nelson, can you hear us? Hello? Hello? Dr. Nelson, are you with us?
How's that? Can you hear me?
Oh.
Are you good?
Yep. I can hear you now. So, give us a little rundown. What's your background, and how'd you get into being interested in combat sports?
Well, I'm a board-certified physician, family medicine, and medical director for occupational medicine and urgent care out here for Next Care out in Phoenix. And I had some specialized training and residency in musculoskeletal and medicine and sports medicine. My interest in the MMA, martial arts, contact sports goes way back from the beginning of UFC, probably stemming from my involvement in traditional karate for close to a decade or so. I did traditional Okinawan Shoryu and then a Shorinryu and competed nationally in some point karate and just been an avid fight fan for years.
Awesome. And we actually had a news story we discussed a little bit earlier about a fighter who was saying he's going to retire because he just suffered his second broken jaw. And we're kind of wondering, wow, if you could give us some just a little bit of insight on what's involved in that kind of a break and how it could make you susceptible to another break later. Because you know, sometimes they say like a broken leg will heal stronger, but
right.
I imagine it's different with the jaw. Right?
Well, I mean, in a sense, it heals. A bone will heal stronger in the site that it was broken, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the sites adjacent to that are going to be any stronger. And when you've got one area that's of unequal strength and any force applied in different areas, depending on the shape of the bone, may sustain fracture again. And the jaw is kind of considered, you've seen it, we've all seen the jawbone, like the lower jawbone. It's kind of a Y shape, like the top of a Y or a U. But that's still really considered, because it's locked into the joint. With the skull, it's considered a circular bone. And when anything's circular, it doesn't break in one spot. It tends to break, tends to fracture in two spots. So most jaw fractures are complicated with the fact that they fractured more than one site. And then depending on the nature of the break and the severity, you can have that wired together to heal, or sometimes they may have to plate it. A couple of fractures just based on the, on the length and surface area of the jaw, two jaw fractures, doesn't leave a lot of room left in that bone for good, for good integrity. Even with the healing, you're going to have a lot of callus formation and scarring down from those previous fractures.
All right. And I know I mentioned this to you over the phone before, but we also had a fight not too long ago with Jamie Varner. What looked like a broken ankle,
right.
Continuing to fight on it, and what kind of damage can you do continuing to try to walk on a busted ankle? I know I've done that myself because I was drunk on my broken ankle.
Yeah, I think those injuries are in a different category. Well, you're going to sustain a little bit of damage, but the sheer pain involved in trying to weight bear on that thing is probably not going to allow you to do extensive damage. You're kind of numbed out from the adrenaline of the fight. The body perceives that as a kind of a life or death situation. You get a big adrenaline dump that sustains throughout the fight, and a lot of times those injuries aren't as severe until after the fight. A fracture is pretty painful. When we're talking about an ankle, though, we're talking about a whole set of bones in there. Depending on what that fracture actually is, it depends on how much damage you're going to do, trying to weight bear on that. But these guys are warriors, and their body is their tool, for their weapon, and you know they certainly don't get to that stage by succumbing to pain.
And how about your own personal experience with actual fighters that are out there today in the pro ranks? You get any interaction with anybody that we might have heard?
Well, most of the things that we're going to see in the urgent care setting here are going to be, you know, minor fractures. We're not going to see Anderson Silva type things hobbling into the clinic. You know, those are going to go directly to the ER. Some nasal fractures, cauliflower ears. Maybe a suspicion of a fractured rib or something. Probably the most. You know, and unfortunately, I don't have any real gruesome fracture or laceration stories, but I do have a story of a guy that was fighting with a Prince Albert piercing. You guys know what that is, and he was wearing a fenestrated cup, has a little holes in it, and sustained some kind of a kick to the groin, and apparently that Prince Albert was kind of caught in one of those fenestrations, and so when that cup got displaced, so did the piercing. So that was probably the most gruesome thing I've seen.
Yeah, that's no fun.
That might be the most gruesome thing I've heard.
All right. Well, how about how can fighters think more about and do more about trying to prevent injuries?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Rich?
You got any tips on how fighters can do anything to prevent injuries, whether it be breaks, fractures, or cuts?
Well, I mean, I think it's that point of discussion, right, that, you know, that we spoke about the other day with the repetitive head trauma. It's the same thing. I mean, to reduce, it's defense, right? I mean, if you don't want to get cut, don't get hit. Kind of thing. I'm not aware of anything that effectively is going to toughen up your skin enough to avoid a laceration, because the skin is, you know, it's not just what we see on the surface. It's very deep. You know, I mean, it's a by the eyebrows. It's not terribly thick, but it's composed of a bunch of different layers of tissue, all kind of, you know, blended together. And you know, you can do something to the surface. You can callus it up or something like that, but when you apply enough force and abrade that skin against the bone with an elbow or something, it's just going to split. You know, I think fractures is a good technique. Just, you know, keeping your hands closed, and, you know, more fighting type stuff than anything medical. Drink your milk, maybe, you know, but other than that, really, it's just kind of the nature of the sport.
Yeah, it's interesting you say keep the hand closed, because we have seen our previous year this year and in years past of UFC guys picking their hands. And there was an interesting story a few weeks ago that they recently came out with a new glove and they started using it in Bellator, and they've seen the hand breaks go down dramatically since then. They haven't had a single hand since they started using it.
Did it affect, so it reduced hand fractures, does it affect the ability to grasp or grapple at all?
No. You know, every glove designed just to be approved in martial arts, you know, you have to have that ability. But I think what they did just made it a little more curved, whereas, you know, the traditional glove kind of ends so that your knuckles are straight. But this way, it kind of makes sure your hand is curved a little bit more.
Sure.
So, product by Everlast. As a fan and as somebody who watches a lot of mixed martial arts, can you tell us about some of the worst injuries you've seen, other than maybe Anderson Silva?
I think that's probably one of the worst. There's been some knee injuries, some of them with knockouts. You know, when somebody goes down and you can tell they've just totally deranged their knee. I think was it the Crow Cop, one of those, that folded up. I think, you know, really that's it. I can't remember who it was. Somebody was fighting with a middle toe that was sticking straight up, but. I haven't seen too many compound fractures or anything like that. in MMA. I think, you know, some subtle fractures. I think Anderson Silva sticks out in my mind as probably one of the worst injuries I've seen.
Yeah, I called that the rubber chicken kick. And speaking of Anderson, how do you think he's going to fare when he tries to come back?
You know, physically, I didn't see the fracture. So if he doesn't have any bone length discrepancy, and I'm sure he's got the best surgeons in the world, I think he'll be fine. I think, honestly, it'll be more of a mental thing that he'll have to overcome than physical. You know, but in terms of integrity of his leg, I think he'll do fine, depending on how he was able to rehab. You know, if he got any atrophy or you know, any weakness in that muscle and didn't rehab it, he may be susceptible to, you know, just some connective tissue injuries or something like that. But I anticipate he's going to come back and do fine as long as the mental component is taken care of.
All right. Now, do you have any fighters that you always watch when they fight, or anybody that's your all-time favorite?
All-time favorite, boy. You know, I've got so many. I really like, you know, I kind of favor Machida because he's a traditionalist, and I think that employs some of that evasive movement that can help with the reduce the head injuries and the damage sustained in the sport. Really, I like, you know, I just like a lot of fighters. There was one that I really used to like that I don't see anymore. I don't know if he's been released from the UFC. It was Miguel Torres. And I liked watching that guy because he was busy the entire time, whether he was on his back or standing up. No matter what he was doing, he was trying to inflict damage, and he was a great fighter to watch.
Yeah, I think Torres was thrown out and then brought back at some point. I'm not sure.
He's back in the UFC.
But if I remember correctly, he was the one that had that controversial comment about some kind of rape ban. Said something stupid and put it out on Twitter on top of that, and then he got sent to some other fight company and worked his way back.
Okay.
But I haven't seen anything recently, so I don't know. I think that was the case.
Okay. Yeah, he was a great fighter to watch.
And what do you enjoy most about mixed martial arts as a sport?
I think it's just as basic and pure as you can get in terms of a sport. I mean, it's. It encompasses every aspect of the human body, the physiology, the mental capacity to compete. I just don't think that you can get much more pure of a sport. I know it's deemed violent by some people, but when you look at the hits that some of those football players sustain over time, they've done some studies with some accelerometers and helmets and seeing how many, you know, head hits those offensive linemen took at one of the colleges over the season. I mean, it's just a little bit more graphic, but it's just a beautiful sport. You know, these guys are just out there barehanded. It goes back to the Mayans, you know, wrestling in the pits kind of thing. It's really fascinating for me to watch. You know, it speaks more about somebody's tenacity sometimes than it does even their skill level. You know, just their ability to survive and their desire to compete and to be the best. And I think it's the ultimate sport.
All right. And as far as, you know, the rules, they call it the unified rules of mixed martial arts, is there anything that you can think of that they need to change to make things safer and to prevent injuries for some of these fighters? Because I know right now we've got, you know, no 12-6 elbows, obviously, you know, no eye gouging, no manipulation of the joints, no spine punching or strikes. Is there anything else they forgot, maybe?
You know, I don't think so in terms of a specific rule, but, you know, there is a rule of stoppage when the fighter is unable to defend himself. And I think, you know, because we're talking about, any concussive events, I think that needs to be extended to, the inability to defend oneself physically and or cognitively, meaning, I think the referees and the ring physicians really need to hone in on that in light of the potential for damage with brain injury and stuff like that. And, you see, oftentimes you'll see a guy kind of get his bell rung in the fight, and then he comes back out and just starts wading into punches, and that's because cognitively he's not present enough. They train so much that a lot of their stuff is reflexive, and they're fighting not even being present because they've had a concussion. But I think that we need to pay more attention to that. I don't know that we need to do anything restrictive in the sport necessarily, but I think definitely need to, pay closer attention to the fighter's, alteration in brain function, during a fight, and get some pre-fight and post-fight assessments going, so we can kind of monitor that.
Right. Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because the first fighter that comes to mind when you talk about that is Junior Dos Santos, and he actually, in one of his main heavyweight fights there, I think it was one of the first second Cain Velasquez fight, where he had mentioned in a post-fight interview how long after the fight that he didn't even remember half of the fight.
Right, right.
So, when you hear stuff like that, you've got to be concerned. And I could tell right away from watching his behavior in that fight that he was out on his feet in
sure.
a lot of those
sure.
situations. Like you said, just kind of fighting on reflex. So, yeah, that's,
right.
that's got to be
interesting. A lot of those guys will get knocked down and they don't know how they – sometimes they don't know how they lost the fight. And, when there's not even a loss of consciousness or after the fight, they're not sure. And that's just one symptom, an amnestic – having that memory loss, that amnesia is just one symptom of a concussion, right? So we know they've sustained damage. At that point, and I know the UFC and other organizations have their, rules in terms of return to play or when they can return to contact again when you've been knocked out. But currently we're not doing anything to assess people who don't get knocked out that just take a lot of damage during a fight. And that's where I think these screening tools could be of a great utility.
Yeah, actually, I did mention to you that the Lou Ruvo clinic or center out there in Las Vegas is doing a huge study with all kinds of boxers and mixed martial artists. The UFC has actually contributed some significant money to that study, and I think they're doing it over the course of like 3 years where they're watching these fighters and they're examining everybody. And it's going to be interesting to see what that concludes, but there has been some more recent studies that have shown that, number one, mixed martial artists sustain more concussions on average than boxers. And number two, the head damage is very different from the mixed martial arts than it is from a boxing knockout, typically. It's even in these flash stoppages, they're sustaining concussions. They're, whether it's hit directly or when they get hit and they go to the mat, and their head bounces off the mat.
Right.
They get these different type of injuries.
Well,
so,
and if you consider... I'm sorry, go ahead, Richard.
I was saying it's one of those things that, you wonder how they can deal with that, how they can successfully try to prevent some of that stuff.
Well, sure, and I think, a couple of points there. A concussion is sustained from a blow to the head. The brain kind of floats around in the skull, right? And it's bathed in this fluid. And when you get hit hard enough, it moves that skull fast enough, and your brain bounces off that, sustains, microcellular injury and may pull on some nerve fibers, and that's what results in all those symptoms of a concussion. And if you consider about, I think the last statistic I saw was like 20%. Of boxers end up with some kind of chronic damage, brain damage from boxing, and you're saying that recent studies show that there's more damage and a different type, maybe a little bit worse with these MMA fighters, and we definitely need to be, you know, doing this research. And I haven't had a chance to look into that particular research, that you mentioned. I'm not sure how much information is available as far as what they're doing, but one of the important things, in my opinion, in being able to do the research is getting baselines. You know, is getting baselines, and that's what I'd really like to see in terms of the prevention, is like a program where they have mandatory baselines before they fight. When they start their career into their professional career, and then they get reassessed after a knockout, or they get reassessed, you know, on a particular time period, every year, you know, something like that. Because there's some programs out there that are cutting edge that are being used by some college football programs. I think Notre Dame uses the Axon program. And it's an online cognitive function test program where you get a preseason baseline. You know, measures three components of your brain function, and then any time there's an event or 6 weeks later, they retest you. And the nice thing about a baseline is, you know, if they're doing research and somebody's got ADD or they're just kind of a little loopy to begin with, how do we know, you know, what their baseline actually is when we're doing this research? And having that baseline pre-fight and then checking them post-fight, you can see the deviation. And that's where we're actually going to get the data and be able to tell when these fighters have sustained subconcussive, that means, you know, no overt signs of a concussion or loss of consciousness, but then we know that they've sustained damage because we're doing this testing.
Yeah. Right. Excellent point there. As far as other injuries that these fighters get, is there anything that you can tell us about that fighters can do after they've been injured, whether it's a break or a scrape or any type of injury that a fighter would get after the injury is treated? Any product that is good for pain relief that you know of, or any typical techniques that they could use to speed up the process so they can get back to fighting?
You know, and we're talking legal substances. I mean, really, you know, good nutrition. I think for any type of healing process, zinc in a mild dose for a short period of time is good. It's great for skin healing. And for, you know, possibly for bone healing, there are a couple of natural substances out for bone healing. I don't know how they do for connective tissue like joints, rotator cuff tears, labral tears, stuff like that, but for fractures, there's a natural product, quadrangularis. It's a real nasty tasting powder. But it's been shown in animal studies to increase bone healing and improve bone density. You know, other than that, Rich, I'm you know, really not sure of anything. I like some natural substances like arnica for soft tissue injuries. I think some of those are kind of subtle. I think rehab is very important when you've sustained a joint injury or any kind of a fracture. You've got to rehab those, stabilize your muscles, and make sure you don't have atrophy and cause further injury, predispose you to further injury. And then you can get into kind of the esoteric stuff that, or not so esoteric, I'm an osteopathic physician, so some manipulation and, you know, stuff like that to make sure that you're in good shape in your musculoskeletal system, I think, is good. But there's no miracle drug out there that's legal.
I love hearing somebody in the medical field mention arnica. My dad actually started using arnica back in the mid-90s. And so he read it in an herbal book. And what he would do was he would actually go to a farmer's market and they would order the arnica berries for him. And he would put them in boiling water and then strain them. And then he would take that and then he would take like a vaccine intensive care, a winter green alcohol, and he would make his own rub user. And he used to use it. I was training in Philadelphia, 17, 18 years ago. And he would bring that down to the gym. I remember one time I was in there with my trainer, and we were working on, you know, some body work, and my trainer went to throw a left hook around the side, and he always taught me, clench your arm and kind of put your elbow out a little bit, you know, to flex it and elbow the guy. And I had to get to my own trainer and turn him to do a trick against him. And within a matter of moments, his entire bicep turned on a nasty purple blackening color. And the next day he came in and the whole arm was just nasty looking. And he rubbed some Arnica on there, and within 24 to 48 hours, you wouldn't know he was bruised at all.
Yeah, keeps the blood out of the wound and keeps the inflammation out. The big thing in traditional karate with round kicks, we throw a flexed toe, a flexed foot round kick, and you get little toe fractures, pinky toe fractures quite often. I think I've had 5 or 6 of them. And after the second one, same thing. I started to use Arnica, and you don't get all that black and blue, all that blood pooling in the foot. It works for ankle sprains. You just have to be careful on, you can't use it on open skin because it'll make the skin blister if you've got any kind of an opening there. But yeah, I think it's a great product.
Yeah, I used it myself, that broken ankle last time. Actually, a different broken ankle, not the one from when I was walking around drunk. Because that one, I got the test on that one. I was jumping over a bonfire up at a graduation ceremony and didn't even know I broke it. So I heard the crack. It was actually on tape. You could hear it like a board breaking. And I ended up getting a cast and never had a problem with it after it healed. But then I broke the other one years later, and I never went to the hospital. And man, have I paid for that. And I tried Arnica on it a bunch of times, and that seemed to work a lot. There's actually products, forget the actual company name, but they combine Arnica and that ice type of stuff, the Valeda.
Right.
That seemed to really work pretty good. I guess Iron Man product, actually. Another question I thought would be pretty interesting to ask. What, Tony?
Well, Rich, in you were talking about, you know, prevention of injury, and I hate to keep coming back to this, but we kind of initially talked about repetitive brain trauma in MMA, and I think, you know, besides the baseline testing and stuff as a preventive model, educating the fighters, I think we need to do that. You know, these guys, I think if some of these guys understand what's going on and they go through an educational process, if there's enough discussion like this out there, you know, maybe these guys, some of these guys, they'll strive to fight a little bit smarter. There's, and develop that defensive technique. There's a mouth guard, and I haven't seen any studies on it, but there's a mouth guard that Under Armour came out with, and their claim is that it reduces the force to the jaw, you know, 20%. And I think what it does is it kind of slightly positions the jaw forward, and it doesn't pin that, you clamp your mouth down and pin it closed, so when you get hit on the point of the jaw, you know, it's not going to translate directly through the back of your head. I haven't seen any data on that, but that's interesting to me, you know, because 20% is a significant reduction of any kind of force. And then the other thing I think to be to consider is, you know, with training and physiologic development, because you can get force translated to the head through a strike to the neck, through a strike to the back, through a fall to the mat. And, I think most of these guys probably do, but I think development of the neck musculature, I don't know if you guys played high school or college football, but Nautilus used to make a machine that you kind of put your head in between the pads and you'd move it sideways and back and forth and really work on the neck musculature. And there's a lot of neck emphasis in football. I think that's just as important in MMA.
In boxing, at a lot of gyms, you see guys strap on that headgear thing with a weight on it.
And right, exactly.
A lot more in boxing than you do in MMA, but they bring up a good point. Those guys do get a lot more contact to that area with kicks and stuff allowed in MMA and elbows. So that makes a lot of sense. I do remember now the question I wanted to ask. Someone once told me, the health food store guy told me that it really takes about 2 to 3 years for a bone to completely heal. Is that true?
You know, from a microscopic standpoint, I don't know. I mean, that doesn't sound right to me. I guess it depends on what we're talking about in terms of truly heal. You know, I'd have to talk to an orthopedist to tell you, you know, when that body's reaction to that fracture, when it stops laying down new bone, and when that bone is completely mature. But certainly, I think, you know, 6 months to 12 months, you should have, you know, significant complete, if not complete, healing of that bone. And of course, it's going to depend on what bone is fractured. Some bones don't heal very well, like a shoulder blade is very difficult to heal. Smaller bones, obviously, are going to heal more quickly.
Now, is there anybody you want to thank or give a shout-out to before we let you go?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to give a shout-out to Stan Szczesinski. He's a doc that I trained under, Dr. Stan. He's in a Westland Sports Medicine Clinic there in Westland, Detroit. It's a suburb of Detroit. Works with a lot of pro and semi-pro athletes there at the Sports Med Center. And then, you know, I'm always available to field any questions. You know, I don't practice medicine over email, but I'm happy to connect and network with MMA people at Doc Nelson, DocNelson, MMA, at gmail.com.
And we know you're on LinkedIn. Is there anywhere else people can find you online?
Probably through LinkedIn is about it. And via that email, and of course I do still see patients here at the Next Care Clinics in the Phoenix area.
Awesome. Well, you've given us a lot of insight and a few good tips for any fighters that are listening. I think all of us are a little bit past our fighting days, but we still try to get in the gym every now and then, so injuries.
Right.
Take note of all that and definitely keep that in mind for the future. Interested in looking at some of the things that you mentioned, this mouse guard. I'll have to research that and the baseline protocol. It sounds like a good protocol to pursue.
Yeah, and you can check that out, Rich. That's axonsports.com. I don't have any affiliation with anything that I've discussed, but axonsports.com gives you that'll give you the background on that. You can even sign up and take that test yourself and kind of see what it's like. It's kind of cool. So,
awesome. I had a little cognitive function problem earlier, but I think I'm okay.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot for joining the show, and we appreciate
your
time.
Yeah, let's do this again, Rich. Thanks very much, guys.
All right. Thank you. So you have Dr. Brett Nelson, and coming up from Arizona out there. Some good insight on medical issues. Had a couple doctors on before, I think. At least one. We had the hand-in-hand guy out there in Vegas. That was actually one of our other most popular interviews, I think, because he put it on his website. So I figured that would be a good thing to go back to. But continuing with the news, we've still got 10 minutes left in the show, but about 20 minutes worth of stuff to cover. We haven't even got to any of the upcoming events, really. I know we've got 2 UFC cards, or at least 3 MMA cards, I should say, Bellator, UFC, and I think World Series of Fighting all having events this weekend. World Series of Fighting Canada is going on. We'll get to that. We'll get to Bellator MMA and UFC fight, another fight night, Anderson versus Khabibov. But I do have a couple more stories to get through. Tom and I emailed back and forth a little bit about this one. Dana White is saying that he thinks Chael Sonnen would be fantastic in his position, taking over and running the UFC. I don't necessarily agree, except for the fact that he'll know more than White does about the fight game. He's been in it. Pro level. But I said to Tom, it's just going from one obnoxious jerk to another. So, it makes sense. I mean, if you want to keep up the controversy and the the basic the attitude of the way that Dana White runs things, then yeah, Sonnen would be the perfect person to pass the torch to. But he's not done yet, and neither is Dana White. So I don't think we're going to see that happen for a while, if it ever does. And actually, another thing I forgot to mention with the doc was he did say, these are the legal things that you can use to overcome injuries. But one of the things that fighters have been using and saying and talking about as helping with injury recovery is this testosterone replacement that they've now banned. And people were using it when they weren't even regulated to, or when they had it regulated, they were used for that purpose, from what I've read. And now there's a report about this positive test for Vitor Belfort. And apparently there's a lot of confusing stories out on this, because some people are saying that it was inconclusive, and other people are saying he tested positive. But Joe Rogan came out and said that Vitor was on testosterone. That's the reason the testosterone got banned in the first place, and the whole thing went down when Vitor tested positive with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. After that, before that, they were considering him for testosterone exemption. And because he tested positive, they scrapped the whole testosterone program. And I had not heard that before, so that's kind of interesting that they... That whole, I know it came around that same time that they banned it, but I thought it had more to do with the Association of Ringside Physicians coming out and saying that they supported a ban, more so than the Vitor incident. And speaking of injury, UFC Dublin has undergone quite the change there. Conor McGregor is no longer going to be fighting Cole Miller. And Cole Miller is going to be replaced by Diego Brandão, who's a completely different fighter. Very explosive, really well-rounded, and Dana White's predicting a real war in this one. McGregor is 14-2. He had his debut at UFC Stockholm, Latif versus Musasi in early 2013, and then got his second victory in the octagon later that year. Then he suffered an ACL tear, which... kept him sidelined, but he's been making the rounds with his cane in the meantime, and now he's back in action. Brandão's 18-9, and he recently actually had to withdraw from the Ultimate Fighter Brazil 3 card due to his own undisclosed injury, but apparently he's going to be ready to go by July 19th. And he's coming off a knockout loss to Dustin Poirier, which ended a 3-fight winning streak. Now, here's an interesting little story about some reality TV coming your way. Spike TV has got some shows about see every now and then this guy John Tapper come in and straighten out a bar. He's pretty abrasive himself, almost obnoxious in some cases, but he ends up warming to these people and fixes up their bar. Well, now Randy Couture and Frank Shamrock are getting together with Spike TV for a show called Gym Rescue. They go into these martial arts businesses and they straighten them out. And we just had a recent story about, it wasn't Frankie Edgar, I don't think, but... somebody in one of the gyms got fired because a guy got a concussion and had to pull out of a fight. I'm drawing a blank on who exactly that was, but it was pretty interesting. Actually, I think it was Eddie Alvarez. Alvarez, when he had to pull out of the Bellator fight there.
Oh, that was down with the Black Zillions. Kenny Mundy, I believe, got fired.
Right. So I don't know if Couture and Shamrock got started early there, but might end up seeing more people fired if they get involved.
Well, that'll be interesting because I know from the few times I watched that bar rescue, the bar had to contact Mr. Taffer through Spike or through the show, and they were in dire financial straits, but it was pretty embarrassing. Now, I don't know if there'd be that same attitude among with the gym owner.
Right.
Because I'd have to think you could come back from having a bad bar. That's one thing. But if you've been training people wrong all that time and you're going to change in 4 days, I mean, don't get me wrong. If it comes on, I'll be watching. But I don't know. This is
very I've been to Ranch out there in Vegas personally myself a few times when I was out there. And I went there for actually a big grappling tournament and met Randy there. And just the fact that, that guy, with all the stuff that he could be doing, was there on a weekend for a grappling show. It tells you a lot about his dedication, training, and sport, and martial art, and everything that leads up to it. There was a lot of UFC guys training there. Still are. His own son followed his footsteps into the sport, so that tells you another thing about, his style, that he's not too harsh, because in a lot of cases, you try to get your kid into something, and you're so into it, and he's not. So, at first, Ryan Couture really wasn't interested, but, after the fact and after his dad got out, he got in, so... That's another interesting factor to it. But actually, they say the three-episode series was shot on location in Colorado and Florida for this gym rescue. And I guess there are only three episodes because they're going to see how it does before they bring it on for a longer run. So I'm definitely going to be checking that out. I'm not too sure about Frank Shamrock's training background. I know he's been on that show. The other reality show on Spike TV about fighting, but I'm not sure about his facilities experience or anything like that, but I'm sure he's got some good family influence, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I know back in the mid-90s, he started training at Ken's gym, the Lion's Den, and he really had no martial arts background, so he picked things up pretty quick. He was a quick study for sure.
And getting back to boxing, we had a story about Don King earlier. Here's the bad news on Don King. He's got a $2.4 million lawsuit filed against him due to the cancellation of the championship bout of Guillermo Jones versus Denis Lebedev, which was supposed to take place April 26th in Moscow, Russia. And apparently the scenario here is that there was a drug test. And the typical scenario is weeks after the fight, a fighter will be notified that he tested positive. But in March of 2013, Guillermo Jones is King's fighter, and he's the former WBA cruiserweight. He apparently had to pull out of the fight last minute, literally hours before, due to the results of this failed drug test. And the substance found was furosemide, which also goes by the names Lasix and Salix, amongst others, used for weight loss and specifically water loss. And the drug is commonly used by heart and kidney failure patients to treat excess water retention. And it can also mask other steroids, so you can imagine that obviously it's very controversial and should not be used by a fighter. The cause of action is breach of contract, which was brought forth by Lebedev and the Russian promotion World of Boxing, LLC. And it's filed in Manhattan Federal Court because the parties have diversity jurisdiction. And the plaintiffs are asking to recover to orchestrate the bout, including $800,000 that was deposited directly deposited directly into King's account in order to secure Jones. So, Don King living up to his old reputation, I guess. Another lawsuit, Chris Algieri owes his manager $1 million, according to a lawsuit. Humberto Romero hit Algieri with his own breach of contract lawsuit, portraying the Long Island pugilist as injury-prone and alleging that he unilaterally broke their deal. Pretty interesting. We talked about Felix Sturm winning the title at age 40. He actually dedicated the win to another big-time Aussie athlete. A guy named T-Shirt Tommy was his nickname. Tom Hafey. And he's apparently taught Sturm that age is just a state of mind. Like Evander Holyfield said once in a conference call I was on, age ain't nothing but a number. But this guy was apparently a big-time athlete down there in Australia and just recently passed away. So I was in shape till the end. And speaking of brain injuries, we had a fighter in Detroit Lakes suffered a traumatic brain injury and a tracheal collapse in his fight last Saturday night during the main event of a 155-pound professional fight between Dan King Kaiser and Frankie Johnson. And Johnson landed a left hook early in the fight along with several up kicks and then managed to put a rear-naked chokehold on Kaiser, and the referee stopped the fight after seeing Kaiser was knocked out. Kaiser was still unresponsive after the bell rang, and he was taken to a hospital in Detroit Lakes, then to Fargo's Sanford Medical Center, where he remained Thursday night. He suffered a traumatic brain injury and had surgery the night of the fight to help drain fluid and relieve pressure and swelling on his brain. He is out of the woods, apparently, but now he's fighting for things like how much rehab he's going to have to do. And the word the doctors used is deficits. Kind of deficits he'll have to overcome here. So our thoughts are with him, and hopefully he has a speedy recovery there. All right. I think that's about all the major news stories. Well, wait a second. So the boxing story. David Hay is coming back, according to his manager, Adam Booth. He started training, and there's no need to keep this a secret any longer, Booth said. He has been trying to recuperate for 5.5 months, and now only now has he been given the all-clear to fight again. So we don't know who he's going to fight, but it's definitely going to shake up the heavyweight division. Manny Pacquiao back in the news. He wants to be a baller. He wants to be a little taller. He's talking about playing professional basketball in the Philippines. I think I sent you guys this. I had the subject line. Who does this guy think he is, Forrest Gump? He's talking about playing a full schedule as a player coach. I can't figure that out. I don't know why he would try to do that. I understand he likes it. I understand Freddie Roach has problems with him just doing it. And pickup games. So I can't imagine he's on board here. And I can understand why. I mean, talk about injuries. We could have asked Brent about this, but I imagine there's a lot of worries about ankle injuries and that sort of thing. You know, little stuff. Hand injuries be a big problem. You know, trying to grab the ball away from somebody or somebody trying to swat you. Swatting somebody else, if you could even get that high. But I really hope this is just kind of more of a support role thing for him, and he doesn't have a lot of playing time, because I don't think that's a good idea for his career.
Elbows in the nose.
Yeah.
Anything could go wrong.
And as a obviously, somebody who's boxed before, I've played basketball too, and I was never any good at it because I'm only 5'10 myself. And the height issue is a big thing, I think. And he thinks he's pretty good. And I know the Philippines is probably not known for having tall citizens. You know, the Asian race in general, usually people are pretty short. But, you know, basketball is a tall guy sport, so I don't know what Manny's thinking. But he loves it, so he's going to do it. And let's just run through quickly here the big MMA fights coming up. Just the first three or four on every card here. UFC Fight Night Henderson versus Khabibov is going to be from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Saturday night, June 7th. Main event is Benson Henderson versus Rustam Khabibov. This is a real test for Henderson. He's 20-3. Khabibov is 17-1. And these Russians in MMA just continue to impress. So Henderson is going to have a big target on his back here. He's trying to bounce back and get back in the title position. And this is the kind of fight that if he wins, it'll do it for him. It'll get him back in there. Also, the co-main event is very interesting. We got Ross Pearson from over there in the UK, 15-6, fighting Diego Sanchez, who's 24-7. And as we know, Diego always brings the fight, and win or lose, he puts it all out there in the cage.
Yeah, and I think this will be especially entertaining. This is Diego's hometown, and you know, we were talking earlier about a must-win situation, and I think he's really looking at that. Not that his career will be over if he loses, but his relevancy is going to take a huge hit, and I'm sure he knows that.
Yeah, he hasn't had the best of luck in the last few fights. And he's bled a lot, that's for sure. We also have John Dodson, who's pretty exciting himself. Always brings a fight in the speed. He's 15-6, fighting John Moraga, who's only got 2 losses and 14 wins there. Also on the card, Rafael Dos Anjos, who's 20-7, 20 wins, 7 losses. Fighting Jason High, he's 18-4, and the guy I've seen fight in person, Eve Edwards. Got maybe not as many fights as Travis Fulton, but probably up there with the most fights in the UFC in the top 10. He's got 42 wins, 20 losses, and 1 draw. And he's fighting Piotr Hallman, who's 14-2, just like Moraga. So that's the main big ones on that card. We also got a former guest of ours from years back, Sergio Pettis, trying to get his first UFC win after he lost his debut in his first ever mixed martial arts fight. He's on that card fighting Yeltsin Meza, who's 20-9. Pettis is 10. We go tomorrow night. We've got Bellator card. Bellator 121 from the Windstar World Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma. And as I mentioned earlier, James the Colossus Thompson is back in action on that card. He's 19-14, fighting Eric Prindle, who's 8-5 in the co-main event there. And the main event is a couple undefeated guys. Somebody's always got to go there. James Austin Heidlich, who I've never heard of. Sure Dog doesn't even have a picture of him. He's 7-0, fighting Louise Philip Linz, who's 8-0. Also on that card, we've got Ramo Thierry Sokuju, who's 14-12, fighting Terry Deviney, who's 10-7. We've got Egidius Valavicius, who's 26-10, fighting Carlos Eduardo, who's 7-3. And we'll leave the rest. If you want to find out who else is fighting, go to Sherdog. And finally, we go to World Series of Fighting Canada 2. Loizzo versus Lewis. David Loizzo in the main event. They call him the Crow. He's 23-10, fighting Dwayne Lewis, who's 14-9. No main event there is Josh Hill, who's 9-0, fighting Mike Adams, who's 7-2. And they only have 4 undercard fights. So go through them all. Nick Penner, 11-3, fighting Jordan Tracy, who's 4-3. Spencer Jebb, 7-3, fighting Matt DeRoche, who's 4-0, and David Perrone, 6-2, versus Ryan James, 5-1. So that's pretty much it. I know we didn't really get to talk about much of the boxing schedule coming up, but we did get around to talking about Martinez versus Cotto, and Tony said he's working on a preview, so I'm sure we'll have that up on FightNewsUnlimited.com when he's done with it.
I'm working on that tonight. I don't think it'll be finished tonight. But I'm working a late shift tomorrow at my job. So I'm going to send the documents over there. And I'm expecting from 5 to 8 months to show. I have some medical written down at my desk. But it's not going to be finished tonight. So I will get a chance to do that tomorrow, get back home, and then I will have a.
Cool. Well, it was a great show. Working on keeping the booking going with some good guests. Working on actually for next week, Mr. Meathead, Matt Mitrione. And if that's not possible, we might be able to get Matt, Fat Pat, who we're talking about from The Ultimate Fighter. And this is another week I didn't get to watch the show. We didn't end up talking about it. But Pat Walsh is a Boston area guy. Just talked to him on Facebook, and he's given the go-ahead that he's down to come on the show with us. So
cool.
If we don't get Matt Mitrione. And we've got a couple other UFC guys in the mix. One manager over there that I'm still friendly with, trying to hook us up. So when I hear from him, I'll know more. But and we've also got Reggie Johnson once back on the show. He actually posted my article on defense on his Facebook page and got a lot of buzz. So excited to talk to him again. That'll probably be in July at the rate we're going. But until next week, I guess that's all for me.
All right, guys. Let's enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the fight.
I'm going out on a limb again. I'm still saying Martinez and 9 Saturday night.
Martinez and 9, all right.
Martinez and 9.
All right, so
folks.
We'll
see. I've been wrong before.
Well, not last time. Last time you even
predicted the round of the I wish I could take my boxing pick and bring that major to the cap table.
Right. All right, well.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure, and so much to you.
Sir, adios.
Absolutely. Absolutely.